It's that time on Talk Radio Europe where I'm joined by the guest Professor Karen O'Reilly. She's a professional research fellow at Goldsmiths University in Loughborough. Lovely title. Hi there, Karen.
Hi, good to hear from you. What's the weather like there?
It's not too bad at all, actually. We've had lots of rain, but it's sunny today, I can say.
We have sunshine. Yeah. Probably a few degrees less, but we have sunshine.
Now, you're in Brexit Brits Abroad, which is a research programme, but can you tell me a little bit about your background?
I'm a professor of sociology, and you actually got the description a little bit wrong there, because I'm actually a researcher based in the Goldsmiths University of London.
Oh, right.
But also emeritus professor at Loughborough University. But it is a bit complicated.
Yes, okay, apologies.
And on top of that, I do some freelance work for the Social Research Association. So, three things.
Yeah, keeps you busy.
Yeah, and I've been visiting Spain since I did my PhD in 1993, was my first visit to Spain, for about a year and a half. Then we had a house there, moved backwards and forwards quite a lot, lived there a few years in between, and trying to juggle that with having a job.
Whereabouts in Spain?
In Cártama,
near Malaga. Yes, I know.
Yeah, near Alarín.
Yeah. I live in Nerja, so it's not that far away.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Have done for more than 30 years, but there we go.
Very nice.
Yes. Now, Spain's changed, and I remember when I moved here, there was hardly a motorway. It took about 2 hours to get to the airport. It's now 40 minutes. The AVE train, I was on an AVE train in 1992. When the Sevilla Expo opened, and the AVE came from Madrid to Seville, going at 250 kilometres per hour, and now there's an AVE from Malaga that will get you to Madrid in just over a couple of hours.
And fantastic! Yeah. I'll have to do that.
And also, if it's more than 5 minutes late, you get all your money back.
I've heard that. You'd almost want it to be 5 minutes late.
Yes, almost. But I'm just saying all this because how much Spain has benefited from being in the European Union.
Right. Isn't that interesting? And one thing you notice when you spend time in Spain and also in Britain is that the Spanish celebrate the money that they get from the European Union and how they've benefited from being in the European Union. So you see big signs up all over the place saying funded by the European Union.
Yes. And don't you see that in the UK? It's a long time since I've been back.
No, near as much. No, since someone pointed it out to me, I started trying to look, and you might occasionally see something in like little tiny writing. But it's very interesting that we don't seem to celebrate. Maybe we haven't had as much money, and apparently we're net contributors, so it's maybe somewhat different anyway. But there are obviously massive benefits from being in the EU. And, you know, for example, many, just in my own field, many research projects that we've managed to do simply because we've got EU funding, which we're all very anxious about what's going to happen now.
It does seem remarkable that 2 years or more after the referendum, there's so much uncertainty still. It's just unbelievable.
It's getting to the point where you just can't think what to say anymore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, I just spoke to a chap the other day, I think he was possibly a Leave voter, actually, and he talked about this Brexit shambles, and he said, you know, I don't care which way anybody voted, I just wish somebody would just get a hold of it and do something with it. And that, you know, that is so true, isn't it? Let's put aside what anybody voted. It's just awful to be going through this.
I think it's time for national unity. And
absolutely,
you know, historically, the Conservative Party have always been split over Europe, and there's no doubt that David Cameron thought he was being clever, and of course he's hidden under his bushel now. Although, I heard he wanted to come back into politics. Heaven forbid.
I heard he was crawling out from under his bushel.
I don't know. So let's have a look at this report then. What's it based on? How many people I've actually filled in your form today, actually, online?
So it's quite complicated. The report that you're referring to is based on our 194, what we call our citizens panel. And these are people who don't just fill in a survey for us, but they have filled in a survey, but they're also there for us all the time They've sent in their stories for us. They respond to questions when we want to ask about citizenship or nation or family or anything like that. So, and they're spread across 23 of the 27 countries. Mm-hmm. That's by luck more than, you know, because it's not always easy to locate people wherever you want them. We actually started off saying we'd get a representative of 7 countries in this panel, and we ended up with 23, so that's fantastic.
That's not bad. How diverse are the people on the panels?
Really, really diverse, and that's just been one of the lessons of the project. So the project has also included a survey of 1,400 people to date, plus interviews in Spain of around 60 people, interviews in France of around 60 people, more interviews that we're going to do in Ireland. So it's a massive project. Mm. But these 194 people, even if we just take them, it's been an eye-opener, the diversity of people. The way they live, ages, social class background, what they do for jobs, what their relationship to Europe is, where they live, how they live, and I tell you the biggest thing is the concerns that they have. There isn't a day goes by that I don't hear another story and I think, oh my goodness, I hadn't thought of that one.
What was it, people in trouble, you mean?
Well, people just with, you know, not necessarily in trouble, but with anxieties, as you say, they're just, you know, not sure, and complex situations. Like my son grew up in France, but is thinking about going to the UK to study. Where will he stand? I live in Switzerland, but I sell my product in Germany. Where will I stand? You know, this ongoing discovery of new complexities. You know, the British in Spain are in Europe are a very, very diverse group. Yeah. In Spain as well, but, you know, in the whole of Europe. I tend to slip up and talk about Spain every now and then because that's always been my
your bit. Well, we're in Spain, so that's fine.
Yeah.
But when I first came here, I think the expat population in general were retired. People have come for early retirement. They need their money.
Yes.
That's changed because people get married. Yeah. They're second generation now.
Exactly.
The whole thing has changed tremendously. And I just think that the stereotypes of the past are long gone.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, I have to take my part in this because my book is called British on the Costa del Sol. Written in 2000 and talks mainly about older people and says that the average age of the population is older than the average age of the population as a whole, of the whole of Britain. However, even then, I was at pains to say other academics were talking about international retirement migration. And even back then in 93, I said, you know, we're talking about children and families here as well. But I have to take my part in contributing to those stereotypes, I must admit, because, as you say, at the time, we were talking about a majority of retired and older people. But, you know, times change. People, like you said, people have families, young people join them, people set up businesses and so on and so on. Things have changed. But what really is astounding us in this project is that Parliament does not seem to get the message. And many, many journalists do not seem to get the message. They are stuck with these stereotypes of Brits abroad as the, and this is why we wanted to write the freedom of movement paper that we've just written, because they seem to have been fixed on this idea that they're people who leave one place and move to another and that's it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they're all old and retired. And it's this kind of dismissive, well, why should we worry about them? One, they've left Britain, why should we worry about them? Two, they've settled somewhere else and they'll be all right. We'll make sure. But it's not, as you just said, that diversity. It's not just about one set of people and one way of moving.
No, absolutely right. But, gosh, that's a prejudice, a national prejudice in the UK?
It really is, and I am absolutely astounded. I even get it from academics as well. When I give papers, it drives me crazy when I go to give a paper. And the questions after I've given a paper always assume that we're talking about people you don't need to worry about, people who've got enough money, made a decision to go and move somewhere else, and that's their new life now, and they tend to be older. And there's these awful, awful prejudices, really.
Do you think
I mean, if we were directed that to another ethnic group, we would be seriously concerned about the prejudices.
But do you think they're a little bit jealous? if they've got this stereotype that we retire early and we've got big cars. And, you know, I live in a very small flat. I barely make the minimum wage. I'm self-employed. But I'm happy here. The healthcare here is stupendous. It's wonderful, and I just wonder if there's a little bit of jealousy when they say, "Oh dear," you know, or is it just class?
I often wonder that. I've never been able to tap into that. Whether you know, actually, to get any evidence or anything like that. But I've often wondered that. Is there something sort of envious, or I don't know. I do find it really, really fascinating, though, that many, many other countries, their attitude to their immigrants is of interest and sustaining relationships and you know, an association with them, seeing them as ambassadors. Some of the people I've spoken to in Spain have said, you know, we're ambassadors of Britain. You know, we're talking English, we're talking to people here, we're talking about Britain, we want to feel proud of Britain.
And we want to integrate and explain as well. I mean, the questions I get asked by my Spanish friends, what on earth is Brexit? What on earth is your country doing? They just can't believe it.
What do you say?
Well, I say I can't believe it either. I just say, Brexit, ¿qué es Brexit?
It's not been an easy project for us to do. Because, you know, we wanted to tap into basically the process as it unfolded. Because we wanted to make sure that we included a diverse group, represented a diverse group, and tried to change the nature of the debate about Brits abroad, by demonstrating that, you know, there were a lot of prejudices about understanding them and getting perspective. But what's happened is that we've just shared these frustrations with and anxieties with people, so it's been quite a difficult project.
Yeah. So what are the basic conclusions of the report?
The Freedom of Movement report, I mean, we've got lots and lots of different reports and lots of research ongoing, but this particular report you're talking about now, we're wanting to make the point that freedom of movement is not simply about... Well, let's backtrack a bit. That the way freedom of movement is often described in EU Parliament and EU Commission documents and in our Parliament, they often seem to make an assumption that it's about movement, migration from one place to another. And there's an implicit emphasis on labour and work and things like that. Hardly any recognition of people working across borders, people wanting to move on in the future, people marrying and having partners in different countries, people wanting to come back here to study. All those complexities are just overlooked in the understanding of free movement by both Europe and our own governments.
I think
we want to draw attention to that diversity, and our conclusions are about this diversity, but also that freedom of movement, what it's meant to Brits abroad, has been also about an open-mindedness and an open heart and embracing of other cultures, other ways of life, that they see it as such a positive thing and are so sad to be losing.
Instead of the island mentality. But I think what you think, I've been saying, right, I'm not concerned because I'm working here, I've paid my taxes and all the rest. But when this happens, if it's a hard Brexit or there's no Brexit at all, if I wanted to go to France, would I need a visa?
Yes.
You know, for example,
if
I wanted to drive back to the UK, would I have to get a visa to go across France? These are the things when you talk about freedom of movement. When you've been living in the bloc, you take it for granted.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, what our respondents have been saying is that not only do they take it for granted, but they believe it's changed the way they think about the world and the way they think about themselves and the way their children think about themselves. And they don't like the way it's making them rethink who they are and where they belong and what Britain's
I would dispute. In my case, I know that I'm a happier person living here and a healthier person, and I know that I'll live longer living here. And I've seen people who've come from Scotland and have moved here for health reasons.
Yes.
And that sort of revelation, you never lose. I think you never lose that revelation that this is something that fits.
I think that's exactly what I'm saying, that people are saying that they feel that moving and being able to move and having this openness to Europe has made them better people, and that they don't want to lose that for their children, or they don't want to lose that
for the children. Yes, of course.
But yeah, absolutely. But you as you say, you've got your own concerns about ongoing movement for yourself, and that's part of the concern. And obviously, there are, you know, we have spoken to people who did vote leave, and are and those also who will not really be particularly affected and feel quite calm about everything. But so we have tried to include their voices as well, but they are all right in situations like yours, where you will be all right, to be honest, but there are still other things like ongoing movement that need to be considered.
Well,
and if you had children that wanted to go and study in the UK or something, then they may have to pay international fees. We don't know.
I see there are opinion polls saying that it is shifting. Because, you know, it was 52-48. Apparently it's the other way around now, but it's still almost, you could say, too close to call. I mean, statistically,
it's still very close.
3%. You know, and I would have thought, if it had been, you know, why the hindsight is wonderful, but if they'd said, look, we need to have a 10% majority, a 20% majority to make this work, because it's such a big thing, and it's going to affect the countries, you know, and the EU as much as, you know, we look at from here, I say, well, the EU is going to suffer as much as the UK is, of course. So, you know, if it had been planned properly and people had been properly informed, you know, it would have been different, I hope.
Absolutely. I think so. I think you're right. I just think it just wasn't dealt with in a very open and honest way, really.
Yeah.
Do you find, talking to people in Spain, that they are concerned about Britain as a result, that they worry about what this all says about Britain?
I think tourism is, of course, the motor for this area, I think a few Brits have gone back, but I think people say, oh, my neighbour's gone back because of Brexit. Well, if you actually ask, it's because they've gone back because there's an elderly member of the family they need to look after, or there's some other reason, and I see Brexit being used as an excuse rather than a reason. I've come across that.
Yeah, but I've interviewed quite a few people who would fall into that explanation. But it is in a way true that Brexit has pushed them to make a decision that they weren't sure about. So it's like because of the insecurity with older people needing to make a decision now rather than wait till they're even older and or maybe have illnesses or something to deal with. But I was more thinking about, a lot of people we've talked about have said that losing freedom of movement, and I think it's something about them having to say we're British and therefore we're no longer European, and that's making them feel uncomfortable because they thought of themselves as European, not British.
So I would always
it's almost like being told you're now British.
I would almost always call myself European, even when I was living in the UK. You know, but when I came here, there wasn't a common market, of course. I had to go to the embassy in London to get a visa and all that. It can go back to that. We did it that time, and it wasn't difficult. It was quite easy to do. And also, people going back, I know people in the UK and in Scotland who are desperate to get here before Brexit comes.
Right, yes. Yeah.
So, you know.
Apparently quite a lot of people are still moving out to
Spain.
Countries.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard recently that
it's called churn, isn't it? I think the statistical term, I think, for it to churn.
I'm not sure I would want to make that decision at the moment. I'm not sure I would feel secure enough, but at least there is this assurance that as long as we do get a deal of some sort, that right through from now until the end of the transition period, anyone who's moved during that time is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And to be guaranteed the right to remain.
Well, Karen,
still you're
a wealth of information, and it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you and chat with you. And what are your ambitions now regarding where's the next thing with this Brexit principle, this research? Where's the research going to go? I suppose it all depends on what happens next week, even. We say the next week's the critical week, but I suppose it does.
You know,
you have to sort of be flexible, I guess.
We're very, very flexible. I mean, it's not we're not aiming for one end product. We will eventually write a book about the whole thing, but we're writing reports, feeding into Parliament, feeding into these parliamentary select committees and things as we go along, writing reports. So we're doing all that all the time. But then we're writing reports like the Freedom of Movement. Well, next one we want to work on is about Britishness and identity, so how people feel about their British identity.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm interested in. I mean, in the end, there's not much we can do about Brexit, so we're enjoying writing the academic articles instead.
Yeah.
People always say to me when I'm interviewing them, are you going to be able to change anything? I say, look, I can try to talk to Parliament, we can do our best, but I'm not going to promise anything.
No, it would be unfair to promise. You know, you can promise to try.
But exactly.
That's all we can do.
And, you know, another thing I get asked, why do you bother if you can't change anything? And I say, well, that's no good reason to give up.
No. Well, yeah, it's such a, sometimes I talk about it a lot and try to keep people up to date on what's happening. And I find it unbelievable sometimes what comes out, you know, the comments that Boris Johnson has made, for example, or Rees-Mogg, for example, you know, and you just think, where are these people coming from? Who do they represent, really? You know, it's just, it's just looking from a distance. You see, you know, you think, good God, what is happening there? You know? Really.
You're looking from your safe place.
Well, yeah, I don't, yes. I almost feel sort of, you know, shameful about the fact that I'm sitting here on an eighth floor with looking out to the sea. And, you know, I just think, you know, I say that with my Spanish friends, actually. I've come up to this, we'll end with this. I've come up with this expression, que suerte tenemos, how lucky we are. I've said that when we've been walking in the woods, or having a nice meal, or just sitting at a terrace, or just one of those little, or driving somewhere, and it's just one of those little instants that you know you're going to remember forever, and I just say, ¿Qué suerte tenemos? And now they are saying back to me now, this little group of Spanish friends, you know, ¿Qué suerte tenemos? How lucky we are.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to remember that phrase. ¿Qué suerte tenemos?
Justo. Muy bien.
Gracias.
Great. It's lovely to go on a high end on a high note, and more power to your elbow and your team there. And I shall watch your developments with great interest. Now, thank you very much
thanks
indeed.
Thanks very much, and thanks for the time.
My pleasure.